Hello once again and welcome to the Hope Show. This is the 24th show, I think. Tonight's show is dedicated to Gold Blade, with a bit of the membranes thrown in for good measure. I had a chat with John Robb, who's the singer, the main instigator behind Gold Blade. They released a new album. I got it a couple of weeks ago. It's called The Terror of Modern Life. It's a very good album. It's well worth checking out. I'm going to play a few songs off it tonight. We'll have a membrane song, maybe a Clash song. And enjoy it. And I'll just talk to you at the end of the show. Thanks.
Yeah, just busy, just been all over the place, really. Just was in Istanbul last week, then I was placing gigs back over here, then going to New York tomorrow. It's a bit charging about, really.
All right, yeah. Well, thanks for giving me the time to do this.
I mean, how are you, okay?
Yeah, I'm doing good, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And how's the album going for you?
Really good. It's got loads of great reviews. About 40 really great reviews so far.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. I only got it at the gig the other night, so I've listened to it a couple of times. And it sounds great, of course.
Well, I mean, for us, it's probably the best one we've done. It's just got the right sound on it.
Yeah, you must. Are you happy with the whole sound of it? Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, that was a really important part of it. It actually sounds really raw, really exciting. It's got the proper bass sound on it.
Yeah, and did Andy Burrell do that sound, or?
Well, we did it twice in the end. We did it once with Harvey, and then we had a bit of a massive fallout with Southern. Like Steve had, like everyone has. I mean, everyone's had problems with Southern. But we got lucky. We managed to leave Southern before, because I think Steve's owed money by them, but we managed to get it the other way around, where if you leave a label, you can go to another label and re-record it, and the first label can't put it out. So we knew that little trick, so we managed to get out the whole thing.
Okay.
So we went to John Esperin's label, no Overground.
Yeah.
So that's what we're on now.
Okay. Right, well, I have a couple of questions here.
Cool, yeah.
First one being, do you still believe in the power of rock and roll?
Oh, yeah, quite definitely, yeah. But it depends how you define rock and roll, really, doesn't it? There's so many different versions of what it is. I don't think we're necessarily dealing in a retro thing.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
It's not like a culture. But I still believe in the power and the sound of it and the positivity and the way it can lift you up and maybe create space for some kind of change. They're definitely all those kind of aspects of it. Yeah. The kind of punk rock aspects of it.
Okay, yeah, well, on the website itself, on your website, I was having a look at it there, and of course you state that you're still fighting the punk rock war.
We got a little bit of criticism of that. Yeah. People saying,
what does that mean to you?
Japanese soldiers in a trench when the war, 40 years after the war was over.
Yeah.
Which maybe that's true, isn't it? But I mean, what's everybody else doing that's actually any better, you know?
Yeah.
We still believe in all those great things that came out, the kind of punk rock period. The idea that music was more than just a career opportunity. It was that's something about it that actually could inspire and empower people, like it inspired and empowered us as well,
Right.
like years ago. And you kind of hope that your music does that to other people. We know, and you kind of know your music is in a context as well. It's not just a bunch of blokes playing songs. It has to be a bit more than that, really. And
Yeah, well, like another question I had there was like, what effect has music had on your life? Like, it's pretty obvious, you know,
yeah,
looking
well,
at you,
pretty,
but.
yeah, pretty well. That probably kind of sums it up, pretty, doesn't it?
I'll just give you a life story then.
Well, it kind of puts you on a very interesting trajectory, and it's a very interesting adventure as well.
Of course.
But I suppose there's also the aspect of it's a creative thing, and it's great to be doing something that's creative. So you can always, and it's I'm just amazed after all these years we can actually still have the space to do it, and actually make a record that's been so acclaimed as this after
Oh, that's fantastic, John, yeah.
35, 36 years of making records, you know.
Well, I even know for myself, you know, like from listening to the Membranes and from writing letters to you years and years, that, you know, it had such a big effect. Seeing a band, even, you know, when you were starting out with the Membranes or reading Rocks, that you're kind of like, you can relate to somebody doing that. So you're in a different country and you think, oh, well, I'm not alone. There's other people who are like this. So it's great, you know, that like you're still doing that, you know, 30 years on.
Yeah, I think that's one of things about it, because you could be linked to people in completely different places, can't you? It's not necessarily people like living next door, it's people that someone in Tokyo or Los Angeles or Dublin connect to what you're doing. I think the other interesting thing is that you mentioned Membranes, and I think that affected this album quite a lot, because when we kind of semi-reformed the Membranes about 3 years ago to do the odd gig here and there, because I started playing bass again, it made me realize the power of the bass, and that's it sort of infected Goldblade like a virus. So I think we end up with a record that's kind of in between the two bands. So it's like it's a punk rock album. It's also a post-punk album, all mixed together. So It's got aspects of both.
I found that listening to it that there was bits where you're kind of, it's not that it sounded like the Membranes, but it kind of reminded me a little bit, in parts, you know, and more so than say previous Goldberg.
Yeah, no, it's definitely in there. It's the closest mix of both kind of bands, and in a way, there's a really good review. Somebody said it was like it's like a tribute to all the styles of punk, and I quite like that, you know, because it goes from stuff that's quite hardcore to stuff that's to stuff that's more dislocated post-punk,
yeah,
to stuff that's like the last track, which is like almost like black metal or drone rock or sonno or something.
Yeah.
So it's kind of all the things that came out of punk went down all those different, because punk kind of shattered into like those different little mini versions or little mini scenes. And somehow we managed to capture all those little bits into one record.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But you've been very busy as a band, even though your own life is very busy and you've all of, you know, a life outside the band. But you've been doing an awful lot of gigs and you keep going. Was the delay in the album because of the mix-up with Southern, or did it just...
Well, that was part of it. The album's meant to come out... it was meant to come out last spring, but they kept stalling all the time, and then we had the fallout, so we had to go to another label. But in the meantime, it was quite good actually, because we just got an opportunity to re-record it again. I mean, Harvey did a great job on the first one, but because the band was so hot from touring, but by the time we did it again, the record was just even more powerful.
Right, yeah.
But these things always add, you know, like to the time trying to get the thing out, you know, so it took longer and longer and longer. Luckily, it's kind of music doesn't really date, does it? It's just because it doesn't really operate in a time zone, does it?
No, it certainly doesn't. And what about the song, kind of a story to each one?
It's definitely a kind of a reflection of the times we're in. There's a darkness and uncertainty in the world, and that's kind of like reflected into the music, so that the musically and obviously lyrically as well, definitely. But each song's about specifically different things. I mean, the first song, This Is War, I mean, it could be about ballroom dancing, but it's also about the ballroom dancing of war as well, so it's like the tango of war. So it's kind of obtuse, but because we never interested in writing like directly obvious things, because we're also massive into stuff like Captain Beefheart as well. Yeah. All the surreal stuff. So I always made everything a little bit more surreal than just saying, you know, the government is shit over and over, which kind of works in a way for some bands, but it wasn't something we was ever interested in doing.
Yeah.
So from that, you know, stuff like The Shaman is coming and it's filling the gap, because these are times where there's nothing to believe in. So, because I was reading this thing about in Russia, when there's a lot of kind of fake prophets wandering around, fake shaman, and people are believing in them. And I thought that's kind of interesting, because you extend that to the West, where you have like celebrity culture, which is kind of a lightweight version of it.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a bit about that as well. You know, some of the stuff they, it's kind of... kind of more of an obvious kind of punk topic, but the way everything is so it's so mind-numbing into popular culture. And how everyone's kind of slowly turning to like having the mentality of like children, really. It's like eating like baby food and watching like kind of childlike programs of television, like The X Factor. It's kind of comment on that, really. So that's kind of like the strands go through the album, that kind of stuff.
What about serious business?
And reggae as well, just to John Peel and everything in Blackpool when we were kids, and how all these different musics just came at us all at once, and it's kind of talk about that and just being in a band and all the certain aspects of kind of counterculture or whatever that are still kind of left. So it's kind of like it's a potted history of the last 35 years, 40, 50 years of counterculture shoved into three verses.
Brilliant. And there seems to be kind of clash references throughout the album, you know, just kind of little.
There's a few, but I think people find more than we thought there would be. You know, I mean, obviously we really like The Clash, but we probably like bands like Stranglers more, and there's more references to them probably musically. I suppose Serious Business could be Clash, but it's also a bit of a Roots thing as well, in the sense that's in there as well.
Yeah.
So that's all part of the DNA of the record, because you've grown up with those bands. But there's also, it's probably going to be alternative TVs in there, and Killing Joke and all those bands you grew up years ago. But like a photograph of 35 years ago. I mean, that's the roots of it, but everything kind of continues on as you get to other styles of music. I mean, there's probably bits of Black Flag and Binding Threat in there and other bands from 25 years ago. And then all the other types of music you listen to now. I mean, obviously, a lot of that drone rock stuff, that Sun-O stuff, really into that as well. So that kind of crept in a little bit with the deep tuning on the guitars and the drones on the title track as well. Although we kind of did our own kind of version of it, took it somewhere else.
And at a Goldblade gig, does this kind of like an inclusive feeling, you know, like say, you know, if you're playing Riot or whatever, you get as many people up on stage, or you know, when you're there, you're kind of charismatic on stage, where you're reaching out, shaking people's hands or whatever. And like, what's the intention behind that?
I think again, that was a punk rock thing, really. When it was always about sharing the space, wasn't it? So things in punk rock was the audience was as important as the band, really. It wasn't about rock stars and the serfs queuing up to buy stuff afterwards. I mean, I suppose in a mini sense that kind of goes on, but it was more about sharing a communal feeling, really, of celebrating the music. And I think that was an important part of what we do, really. And we try and make it feel like that as well. And I think it's great when people connect with the music that you're playing, but also you can connect back with the audience as well. So the energy kind of goes round in a circle. Not really. No, you could definitely break the barrier down, really. I suppose by the time you get into a stadium, which you very occasionally play, it gets more difficult. But saying that, if you play festivals and there's like a fence at the front, you just go down to the fence and it actually exaggerates the breaking down the barrier. So it's sort of in a weird way, it makes it simpler.
Okay. Yeah. And what about Britain? What's your impression of Britain in 2013 as opposed to, say, Britain in, when would you have started music? 78, 79?
Yeah, well, in the late 70s with the punk thing. in some aspects it's kind of weirdly similar, you know. It's just because of the recession, because you got a Tory government, although at that time, late 70s, it was a Labour government, but it didn't feel particularly Labour. But there's a certain kind of breakdown in society with the financial stuff. I think that what the world's kind of, sometimes it can look a pretty scary place, you know. There's definitely a polarisation going on, and unfortunately, a lot of it seems to go in towards the right and things. So it's these are very uncertain times. I think I was just thinking about this in the album title of the day, and I was thinking the key word that you read everywhere now is terror, which is obviously in the album title. But I was thinking that's a nice little lineage back to punk, because the key word at that time was obviously the Clash, wasn't it? And that's how they got their name. Because I was thinking, like, you know, if the whole thing happened again right now, which it wouldn't, but the key word you'd be using instead of calling yourself the Clash would be the Terror or something, because that's a word you unfortunately see every day, over and over and over, in every headline, every story, isn't it? And it's a defining word of these times, really.
That's true, yeah. And what about yourself?
I think the other thing is that the establishment's kind of been found out now, isn't it? I mean, but for years, people, the punks, seem to go about the bankers, like fleece people. Everyone just thought it was just kind of mad hippie talk, and now it's just everybody knows about it, don't they? It's just completely blown open. But what kind of makes it worse is it doesn't make any difference, does it?
Like it's like everybody knows, but there's still very little change, and it's still, you know, the same type of governments are being voted back in by people, and it's almost like they're trying to make things right so that the bankers can get back to what they were like previously.
Yeah, I just think those people just untouchable, aren't they? That's the problem. You just they don't care anymore. It's like, you know, like the way they used to ban records, but why would they ban records now? Because it makes no difference, does it? Yeah, it's all different things. Yeah, I mean, Istanbul was like it's like a music conference. I was on a panel talking about music cities, so I was talking about Manchester and the music history of Manchester. Someone's doing Seattle, and someone's doing Istanbul. So it's talk about how, you know, how scenes occur. So it's quite interesting, really. It's quite almost intellectual kind of debates about music. So that was good. And then the next night, I did a Q&A with Steve Gullick. You know, the photographer did all the great Nirvana pictures. So he had an exhibition out there, so did that. So that was good. So it's always like kind of interesting things going on outside the music. Because
Have you any books on the way or any plans now for
yeah,
more?
the next one, there's going to be a digital book where someone's done a version of the blogs I did about the Justice for the 96 tour, which I did with Mick Jones last year. We did about 15 gigs where Mick would play loads of old Clash songs, with the farm backing them up. But that was like that all over the UK, and went out to Europe, the Stone Roses, and did it. So it's a really great kind of rock and roll story, but also with it, it's a powerful emotional story, because it's about the 96, and it's great how Mick did all that Clash stuff for that. You know, it was no one got paid, and Mick Jones will only ever play Clash songs for a reason as well. I mean, he could easily go out and do a Clash style band and probably get pretty big crowds. Obviously, without Joe, it's not the same, but he could pretty well go out and make a good living out of just playing Clash stuff. But he won't do it for money. He'll only do it for a cause, because he said those songs were written for a reason. The founders. Had when they overturned the previous decisions was not to do that tour. It's because, you know, it's to do the mothers of the people who died. But I think the tour helped in a sense that it kind of entertained the people that were in the campaign, and it kind of empowered them, made them feel better. And it was, I think the people of Liverpool felt great because outsiders come to town and play this music and said, look, we're on your side. And when Stone Rose did it in Manchester, I think that was powerful for people in Liverpool, because they're Man United fans and there's all that rivalry. So they felt it was good that Man United fans are with them. So it's kind of an empowering thing more than the thing that actually definitely changed it. What definitely changed it was like the one rule of politics is never take on the mothers, you'll never win. I mean, establishment, they found that out, didn't they? You can't beat the 96 mothers, can you?
Yeah.
So that was good. So that's the next book. And then sort of, maybe do an autobiography at some point, sort of talk about it at the moment. Because it's a lot of very good stories, but you wouldn't have to necessarily know who I was to actually get the stories.
Yeah. Plenty of stories, I'm sure.
It's kind of a book about a quest from punk rock onwards, in a sense.
Yeah. And what about the website, Louder Than War? How's that going for you?
Yeah, it's going really well now. It's going to get loads of hits. There's a lot of people helping me out with it now, so get a really good flow of articles on it. There's a lot of stuff on it. And it's really eclectic as well, which is really important, because I don't want it to just be one thing. Because you kind of like, when you're growing up with stuff like John Peel, it was great because it was really eclectic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of weird when you listen to all so-called alternative radio now, because it only plays indie music. And they have like special shows that play loads of other stuff about 3 a.m. to pretend it's more alternative than it is. But what we used to love about Peel was it was about 10 o'clock, and now it's 10 till 12, wasn't it? And, you put it on and you'd be listening out for the new Strangers album, then you'd get to African music 4 minutes later, and it was, I mean, that was its strength, really. And kind of want to reflect that on the site as well, so we're open to any ideas of any types of music, really.
Yeah, brilliant, yeah. And how about the Membranes? Have you anything lined up with them?
Yeah, we got this amazing gig in Manchester on July the 20th, where we're going to explain the whole of the universe from beginning to end. And it came out because I did this TEDx talk and I met the bloke who runs the Higgs boson project. And he explained the whole of the universe in about 20 minutes over dinner, how it started, what's happened to it now, and how it all ends. And it all ends in all the photons all split. And it's like, for eternity, it's brilliant white light. So it sounds like the religious idea of heaven in a weird way. Just this brilliant glowing white light that goes on forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, wow, that'll make an amazing idea for a gig, to put all that stuff into a gig. So then I met a local artist. He's going to do an art installation for it. We're going to bring the Higgs boson project over to do an in conversation. We're going to do like science experiments like they used to have on those science programs in the 70s, where you just get three ping pong balls and a Bunsen burner and explain, you know, like how the universe is formed. Just like really simple things, but make explain really complex ideas from them. And at the end, the membranes will play along to film of the universe. So it's be virtually a whole new set with probably two old songs and four new songs. So it's a pretty mind-blowing event. So it's going to be on in Manchester July 20th. But we've had loads of offers to in other places now because people go, fuck, that sounds good.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it's going to be somewhere between a museum piece and a gig.
Yeah.
And what about but it really works the membranes, because the membranes musically can just do what you like, really. Yeah. So the stuff we kind of got written for it, it's kind of psychedelic apart, but it's also pretty heavy as well at the same time. So. So yes, we've got to do that. Maybe do Primavera next year, and maybe some more of those kind of festivals. Because it's not really a band that can tour much, but we may bring over to Dublin, members of Dublin in the autumn as well, to speak to Peter about it.
Oh, brilliant! That'd be great. Yeah, it'd be great. And how about you? Are you still doing your fitness regime? You're still going out jogging and still?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Helps you think straight.
Still keeping the still on the healthy diet.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, still vegan power in it,
good
Niall.
Man,
no.
Good man, John. Yeah. I had to get
there's
vegan.
a lot more of us now than there used to be, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I had to get the vegan bit in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And what about the plans for Gold Blade now with the new album? Are you going to be going out touring more, or is there a lot of gigs planned?
Yeah, all the way through the summer, there's gigs and there's some festivals. Then we'll tour in the autumn, and then because these days a record, you put it out and it. In the old days, you put a record out and everybody buy it in the first week. And these days, you can't, because there's so much stuff out there.
Yeah.
And the way people access music is so different that records kind of drift in and they go up in an arc instead of down an arc. So you get loads of good press. So people go, yeah, I see your record's got really good press. I'm going to get hold of it the next month or so. And it's like everything's kind of all the way around now, isn't it? So in the old days, after a month, your record will be over. But records last forever now. So you could. I mean, you see that now with really big bands. They tour albums for like 4 or 5 years, don't they? Because just the way people consume music is so utterly different. You know, you'd be selling records and people come to go, yeah, I love your new album. I've got it off of Pirate Bay or something, you know. Go, yeah, thanks, mate, yeah. Or they'll just watch a clip on YouTube or they just send an MP3 round or something, which is cool because it gets the music out there, doesn't it? But it's just... So that's why you just keep touring the same record over and over and over, because it's a longer and slower process getting the music out there.
Oh,
out by whatever albums, you know.
Yeah, the Harlings, there's a few dotted around. The ones who really knew what they were doing, like Action and Preston or Piccadilly Manchester, they're ones that survive, aren't they? But the other ones, you just, they're just every now and then you hear another one that's shut down, don't you? Which is a shame, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
Because
yeah.
they were like they were like the backbone of the culture for years, weren't they? Because all culture comes out of space, doesn't it? And you have to have spaces where people meet. But I suppose the spaces where people meet now are online, aren't they? So it's kind of still there, it's just changed a different way, which is a good thing, really, because pop culture is always about technology, wasn't it? So
yeah, I suppose it's just ever evolving. All right, it's just different.
It always was, when like the 7-inch single was once newfangled technology, wasn't it? So I mean, you can still play rudimentary music, but you have to understand how to get it out to people. It's a completely different process than it was years ago. It's not fanzines, it's not record shops, it's not flyers. Well, flyers are still quite effective, and there's other things you can use as well now.
Yeah, sure.
And the internet can be really good for that kind of stuff. And it's quite interesting seeing like bands that really untechy bands getting this whole new younger audience, because either they or their fans have understood how to use the internet for them.
Yeah.
And it's made a real difference. So it was quite interesting this year, because we played the Stranglers at the Roundhouse and they sold it out completely. And they'd done their longest British tour for years and sold out most of the tour. And that has to be down to the internet, really, because the fans have kind of organised around the band and sort of pulled people in.
Yeah.
And the band's become like internet communities, big internet communities. And the idea is that you are the media now. It's not hoping three people the enemy like your record. I mean, you just ignore them and just get on with yourself, don't you? Especially if you're a bigger band, you only got a bit of a name, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, well, you know, like you have your Twitter and your Facebook or whatever, but Twitter, where it's just, you know, you get peep tweet and then that gets retweeted and it suddenly a couple of thousand people know.
It could be a lot more, yeah. I mean, it could go beyond the people who read your site that might only read the tweet, but you can get information out to like 50 to 100,000 people, you know.
Okay, yeah.
So it's a very powerful medium.